理课堂听 class.com。
Unit 7 Preview. Everyone worries about the pressures of modern life. The world is getting too complex. The pace of life keeps getting faster. Financial pressures are growing. Competition is too intense. No one has time to relax, and even small children are having nervous breakdowns. No one wants to live this way. So what can we do about it?The authors of the texts in this unit have some ideas. Text A talks about the pleasures of doing something badly now and then. Text B describes some practical steps we can take to keep life simple. And text C ponders how we can maintain a clear vision of what's really important in life.
Text A. So what's so bad about being so-so? By Lisa Wilson Strick.The other afternoon, I was playing the piano when my 7-year-old walked in. He stopped and listened for a while, then said, "You don't play that thing very well, do you, Mum?" "No, I don't. My performance would make any serious music student weep, but I don't care. I've enjoyed playing the piano badly for years. I also enjoy singing badly and drawing badly.I'm not ashamed of my incompetence in these areas. I do one or two other things well, and that should be enough for anybody. But it gets boring doing the same things over and over. Every now and then, it's fun to try something new. Unfortunately, doing things badly has gone out of style. It used to be a mark of class if a lady or a gentleman sang a little, painted a little,played the violin a little. You didn't have to be good at it. The point was to be fortunate enough to have the leisure time for such pursuits. But in today's competitive world, we have to be experts even in our hobbies. You can't tone up your body by pulling on your gym shoes and jogging around the block a couple of times anymore. Why? Because you'll be laughed off the street by the serious runners.The ones who run 20 miles or more a week in their $60 running suits and fancy shoes. The shoes are really a big deal. If you say you're thinking about taking up almost any sport, the first thing the serious types will ask is what you plan to do about shoes. Leather or canvas? What type of soles? Which brand? This is not the time to mention...that the gym shoes you wore in high school are still in pretty good shape. As far as sports enthusiasts are concerned, if you don't have the latest shoes, you are hopelessly committed to embarrassing yourself. The runners aren't nearly so snobbish as the dancers, however. In case you didn't know, going dancing no longer means putting on a pretty dress and doing a few turns around the dance floor,with your favorite man on Saturday night. Dancing means squeezing into tights and leg warmers, then sweating through 6 hours of warm-ups, 5 hours of ballet, and 4 hours of jazz classes every week. Never tell anyone that you like to dance unless this is the sort of activity you enjoy. Have you noticed what this is doing to our children? We don't want that nerd on our soccer team,I overheard a 10-year-old complain the other day. He doesn't know a goal kick from a headshot. As it happens, the nerd that boy was talking about was my son, who did not, like some of his friends, start soccer instruction at age 3. I'm sorry, son, I guess I blew it. In my day, when we played baseball, we expected to give a little instruction to the younger kids who didn't know how to play.It didn't matter if they were terrible. We weren't out to slaughter the other team. Sometimes we didn't even keep score. To us, sports were just a way of having a good time. I don't think kids have as much fun as they used to. Competition keeps getting in the way. The daughter of a neighbor is a nervous wreck, worrying about getting into the best tennis school. I was a late starter, she told me, and I only get to practice 5 or 6 hours a week, so my technique may not be up to their standards. The child is 9. She doesn't want to be a tennis player when she grows up. She wants to be a nurse. I asked what she likes to do for fun in her free time. She seemed to think it was an odd question. "Well, I don't actually have a lot of free time," she said. "Homework and tennis and piano lessons kind of eat it all up. I have piano lessons 3 times a week now, so I have a good shot at getting into the all-state orchestra." Ambition, drive, and the desire to excel are all great within limits, but I don't know where the limits are anymore. I know a woman who's been complaining for years that she hasn't got the time to study a foreign language. I've pointed out that an evening course in French or Italian would take only a couple of hours a week, but she keeps putting it off. I suspect that what she hasn't got the time for is to become completely fluent within 1 year, and that any lower level of accomplishment would embarrass her. Instead, she spends her evenings watching TV and tidying up her closets, occupations at which no particular expertise is expected. I know lots of people, too, who avoid activities they might enjoy because they lack the time or the energy to tackle them seriously. It strikes me as so silly. We are talking about recreation. I have nothing against self-improvement. But when I hear a teenager muttering, "Practice makes perfect," as he grimly makes his 427th try at hooking a basketball into the net left-handed, I wonder if some of us aren't improving ourselves right into the insane asylum. I think it's time we put a stop to all this. For sanity's sake, each of us should vow to take up something new this week, and to make sure we never master it completely. Sing along with grand opera. Make peculiar-looking objects out of clay. I can tell you from experience that a homemade cake still tastes pretty good, even if it doesn't look perfect. The point is to enjoy being a beginner again, to rediscover the joy of creative fooling around. If you find it difficult, ask any 2-year-old to teach you. 2-year-olds have a gift for tackling the impossible with enthusiasm. Repeated failure hardly discourages them at all. As for me, I'm getting a little out of shape, so I'm looking into golf. A lot of people I know enjoy it, and it doesn't look too hard. Given a couple of lessons, I should be stumbling gracelessly around the golf course and playing badly in no time at all.
New words. So-so.
Mom.
Incompetence.
Competence.
Boring.
Leisure.
Gym.
Gym shoe.
Soul.
Enthusiast.
Squeeze.
Tights.
Leg warmers.
Warm up.
Over here.
Goal kick.
Slaughter.
Wreck.
Orchestra.
Limit.
Limited.
Tidy.
Recreation.
Self-improvement.
Grimly.
Insane.
Asylum.
Insane asylum.
Sanity.
Opera.
Peculiar looking.
Peculiar.
Clay.
Homemade.
Discourage.
Stumble.
Gracelessly.
Grace.
Graceful.
Gracious.
Text B. Stripping Down to Bare Happiness by Linda Veltner. What we're talking about is simplification, not deprivation, my friend Sarah explains. You can do all the things you like. It's just that you don't like the same things anymore. Some of the old habits seem so wasteful and unsatisfying, you really lose your taste for them. So you still have everything you want. You just don't want as much. When I first met them, Sarah and Michael were a two-career couple with a home of their own and a large boat bought with a large loan. What interested them in a concept called voluntary simplicity was the birth of their daughter and a powerful desire to raise her themselves. Neither one of them was willing to jam what they considered the most important part of their life into the brief time before work and the tired hours afterward. A lot of people think that as they have children and things get more expensive, the only answer is to work harder in order to earn more money. It's not the only answer, says Michael. The couple's decision was to trade two full-time careers for two half-time careers and to cut back on consumption. They decided to spend their money only on things that contributed to their major goal, the construction of a world where family and friendship, work and play, are all of a piece. A world, moreover, that doesn't waste the Earth's resources. Today, they live in the same suburban community in a handsome, energy-efficient home they designed themselves. Small by most standards, it's easy to clean, furnish, maintain, and heat. The first floor, one large room, has a kitchen area along one wall, a wood table and chairs for dining, a living area defined by a comfortable couch and a wood stove, and a corner work area. Upstairs are their bedrooms, an office that serves both Sarah and Michael, and a bathroom. The whole house is bright and light, and in harmony with its surroundings. Soon there will be a solar greenhouse outside the front door. How can a couple with two part-time jobs afford to build their own house, own a car, and share a small boat with another couple, all without a loan? How can they maintain a standard of living that provides everything they want? Don't they miss what they do without? Both Sarah and Michael insist that they're delighted to be free of expensive junk, bathroom cabinets full of cosmetics and medicines they never needed, kitchen cabinets crowded with items that just went to waste. The one closet that Sarah shares with Michael easily holds their basic clothes, many of them well-made classic styles from L.L. Bean. I'm constantly giving things away, Sarah explains. By sifting and discarding, and by keeping track of what they have, Sarah and Michael have a clear idea of what they really need. They don't have a dishwasher. The few dishes they own wouldn't fill one. They don't own a clothes dryer. Wet clothes drying indoors in winter eliminate the need for a humidifier. Sarah's dark hair is short, so she doesn't need a hair dryer or electric curlers. Their front yard is wooded, so they don't need a lot of fancy tools to take care of it. They don't own a TV, so they aren't constantly saturated with images of new and unnecessary temptations. They've exchanged the expenses of work in the commuter age, the extra car, the cost of gasoline, the business suits and the babysitting fees, for time to pay attention to the quality of their lives. They've given up paper products, processed foods, expensive hobbies, first-run movies, restaurants, and paying for the services of others. In return, they enjoy home cooking, family picnics, library books, participation in community art programs, thrift shops, an active YMCA membership, and do-it-yourself projects. That constant wish for more that's so much a part of this culture goes on forever, says Sarah, but it doesn't matter if you're making $15,000 or $50,000. There'll always be things you wish you could afford. Money really wasn't the reason we changed. We did it for our own personal satisfaction. And for anyone thinking of simplifying life, there's only one basic rule. If it isn't satisfying, don't do it. Sarah and Michael lent me their copy of 99 Ways to a Simple Lifestyle, a handbook of practical suggestions that can be applied to anyone's living situation. I read it carefully, giving myself high marks in some areas, surprised at my socially sanctioned irrational behavior in others. That night, accompanying my daughter on a shopping trip, I came across an inexpensive hand towel that matched our kitchen wallpaper and a pair of bargain shoes too handsome to resist. When I stood in the parking lot, $11 poorer and no happier than I had been before, I felt like a child, helpless in the face of my own impulses. It is a world of illusion, this shopping merry-go-round we ride. But with all the action and excitement, it's sometimes hard to find the resolve and the courage to dismount.
New words. Simplification.
Deprivation.
Wasteful.
Unsatisfying.
Voluntary.
Consumption.
Suburban.
Suburb.
Energy efficient.
Furnish.
Couch.
Stove.
Cabinet.
Item.
Classic.
Dishwasher.
Dryer.
Indoors.
Humidifier.
Humidity.
Curler.
Curl.
Saturate.
Temptation.
Commuter.
Babysit.
Fee.
Thrift.
Membership.
Handbook.
Sanction.
Towel.
Bargain.
Illusion.
Merry-go-round.
Merry.
Dismount.
Mount.